You're listening to Dairy Voice by Dairy Business News, a podcast exclusively for the dairy industry.
One of our sponsors of the Dairy Voice podcast is National DHIA. NDHIA ensures information accuracy and represents their members' interests. They are the direct voice for the dairy information industry. To find out more, go to dhia.org.
Dairy One's Soil Laboratory provides a variety of industries with soil testing and analysis. For most of our customers, their businesses literally start from the ground up. A soil analysis will help our customers ensure that the right nutrients are available in the soil or if additional fertilizers are needed. These decisions will impact their plant growth and yield. If you need to improve your soil's health, Dairy One is ready to help. Contact the Dairy One Soil Laboratory by emailing soil@dairyone.com. That's dairyone.com.
Welcome to our latest recording of the podcast series for Dairy Business, sponsored by Showbox Sires. Interestingly, the podcast series is called The Evolution of the Great Cow. And as you found in this series, we hit on topics that have a lot to do with our industry, but it's not always talking about cows. Today, one of my most exciting guests, and I feel very fortunate to call her, I've watched this young lady grow up. I'd call her a friend and kind of a family member. So I'm pretty excited to introduce our guest to our community podcast today. So today we're going to be talking with Ellie Puryear-St-Pierre, who is an Olympic athlete, a world champion runner, and she grew up as a farm kid in Vermont. Ellie, we want to welcome you to our podcast. Can you give our listeners a little history of where you grew up and who you are?
Hey, Tim. Yeah, grew up in Montgomery, Vermont, a very small town, you know, on the Canadian border. You know, I grew up with maybe like 13 kids in my class, and we had school choice and we went to, a bigger neighboring school. Yeah, I grew up on my parents' family's dairy farm and fifth generation to live and work on the farm.
As you talk about your hometown, I want to talk a little more about Montgomery, because Montgomery is one of my favorite towns in Vermont. Beautiful little picturesque Vermont town with covered bridges and mountains. One of the most beautiful sights I see is driving up the mountain past your parents' farm and the sign of you competing in the Olympics out there.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a little more about Montgomery and what the town is and some of the support they've given you.
Definitely. It's kind of like a small mountain town. Like, we're right on the side of Jay Peak, and that's, you know, a pretty big ski resort. They get a lot of tourists and people from out of town. And so we're kind of like the suburb of that. Still like a lot of locals, but definitely more and more people are kind of moving into the town that didn't have the family history that I do growing up there. But it's still very much like the small town feel, and like the community is just awesome to be a part of. Where I grew up is right on the mountain road. So we were like billy goat farmers, they would say. You know, the fields weren't very big and they're pretty rocky and steep and whatever. We made it work. The view is my favorite. Like, it's just so special to me, that view up from my parents' farm just overlooks the valley of Montgomery. And it is very picturesque. It's something, you know, I have grown to appreciate more as I've gotten older, for sure. Now the destination that people come to see. So that's pretty cool to grow up in a pretty place like that. But yeah, just to have the community around me supporting me in this journey that I am doing, it's pretty awesome. I remember really feeling the support from the community in Montgomery was the 4th of July parade in 2021, right after I had qualified for the Olympics. The town like put up this sign across Main Street, literally on the telephone wire or whatever. And it says, Tokyo or bust, leave them in the dust. And the first time I saw that, I was like, oh my God, this is great. But I remember being on this like big float and coming around the corner of my hometown, like where I've just spent all my time, sitting on this float with my dad, and just the crowd just like going like crazy. And just there's so many people there in our little town. And usually we were walking cows in that parade. this year I was riding on the flow. Pretty cool place.
That's a great story. And I would say, just to give our listeners a little appreciation for Montgomery, the population of Montgomery would be 800, 1,000 people, something like that, Ellie?
Yeah, it's 1,000 and growing. It's like, I think at one point it was like the fastest growing town in the state, which is not my favorite thing, but
yeah.
It's at least 1,000. Yeah.
But to give our listeners an appreciation, a town of 1,000, and I guarantee you the community from that area in Vermont were all at that parade that day, Ellie cheering you on. It was,
yeah.
And as you say, the views, and part of the reason, we'll get into your success, but I think where you grew up was certainly that way.
Transform dairy data from numbers into valuable decision-making information with HerdHQ, the ultimate web-based platform brought to you by DRMS. Leverage advanced analytics, benchmarking, and alert systems to optimize productivity, minimize costs, and improve herd health. If you're part of the Beef on Dairy movement, check out Keeper Beef. Love your iPhone or iPad? CalCompass will provide you with extensive animal and herd information, no matter what type of device you use. Do you like charts and graphs? Check out Dairy Depot, with over 100 charts and tables. HerdHQ is available to all herds that process their DHI data with DRMS. Don't miss out on this game-changing dairy management solution. Contact DRMS today to schedule a demo.
Tell us a little about your high school. You referenced Richford High School, but how many kids did you graduate with in your class?
There was about 40 of us, kind of like combined schools or like town from around the area, but mostly just Richford kids. That is where I met my husband, Jamie. Well, I met him in 4-H actually, but that's where we got to know each other better because he went to Berkshire, which was also not in Richford. So we both picked that school. His family kind of grew up in Richford and my sister went to Richford for me. So it kind of seemed like a good fit for me. But yeah, it was still a really small high school, Division 4, I think we were in sports. So
I don't have quite as fond of memories of Richford High School as you, Ellie, because I used to go up there when I was in high school from our tiny little high school in central Vermont and played basketball against your father-in-law. And there were a lot of Saturdays we had to travel 80 miles back through the country roads of Vermont to go home after getting a whooping up in Richford. So I know too much about your high school, Ellie.
That's great.
After high school, I mean, you had a great running career in the state of Vermont, won state championships. And tell us where you went after high school and what happened with you after that.
Sure. Yeah. So in high school, I had, early success in running. My first meet ever, I was ranked second in the state. And I just like thought my coach was wrong when she told me that. Like, I didn't really believe her. Like, I was like, it was in the 3000 meters. Anyway, so I just had, really early success in running. And it was kind of just what I did in high school because I was good at it. You know, I didn't really have like a bigger understanding of the sport and stuff until, later on. Ended up getting a full scholarship to run at UNH. Definitely was recruited by a lot of other schools. Like, I had like a few shoe boxes like full of like recruitment letters. Like, I was always getting calls and stuff from other colleges all around. Like, I really just had no idea what the running world was like. I liked running, like grew to like it more like into my senior year, and cross country was my favorite for sure. I just, I'm going to get a full scholarship, so I'm going to do that. And once I got to college is when I really fell more in love with the sport. I was surrounded by more girls like me and people doing it every day. And where like at home, I felt a little more isolated. Like, there was a lot less of us. My college experience, definitely where I developed a lot as a runner. I was super low mileage. I didn't even know people counted mileage in high school, which is like a big thing. Now, as a professional, I have to remember my audience here is more the farmers, less of the runners. So like, I ran about 30 miles a week, I think maybe a couple times in high school. And that was like a big deal. But then when I got to college, I started bumping it up. So it was more like 40-ish my first year. And I just grew a passion for it. And I continued to have success. I continued to develop. And I was lucky that I had a coach who took care of me and didn't just see my potential and run me into the ground, like me along like my own pace. I'm really thankful for him doing that. And eventually it's what led me to a national championship in the NCAAs my fifth year at college. And that's really what helped me get a pro contract.
What a story it's been. And it's neat. Your coach at UNH that did this, that speaks volumes to him. And what he did for you, because he saw he was training a future professional, and that's what it's all about. So I think you're lucky that you had him. I want to talk a lot more about your running career, but let's switch to your farming career. I know your mom and dad and your sister and your brother. I know your grandpa and grandma on your mom's side. They were friends with my mom and dad. So that's how this all goes. And I know the sense of pride your family has, Ellie. And now I know your in-laws extremely well. But tell our listeners a little about your family farm and a little about you growing up in 4-H and what you did with cows.
There's definitely a lot to tell. I am fifth generation on my parents' farm on my dad's side. Super proud of that fact. Growing up, my siblings and I were always really active on the farm, in and out milking. You know, growing up, I mostly did like heifer chores. We raised replacement heifers for some ring farms. My siblings and I were heavily relied on for doing the duties at the farm and doing chores. And in the summertime, I think we would work the hardest, to be honest. It was when we would throw square bales. We were kind of old school in that way. You know, we were still making dry hay and selling it, you know, people around town. Like my dad, I think, made a lot of his income doing that, sell to people who had a couple horses or a few sheep and some construction companies that needed mulch hay, you know, kind of stuff like that. My true passion was definitely working with the cows. Milked in our tie stall. We had mostly Holsteins. We milked about 40 to 50 cows. So raised heifers, had some beef on the side. Did all the,
You showed your cattle. Did you ever you showed at Vermont shows. Did you go to Eastern States, compete there, Ellie?
Yeah, I did. 4-H was my favorite thing ever when I was growing up. Like that was everything, right? Like I just was living till it was fair season again. Go to all the local ones like Lamoille and Franklin County Field Days, Champlain Valley. And then, yeah, I went to Eastern States a couple times. That was definitely my favorite. Yeah.
And it's interesting. So many of us grew up with that, Ellie. And if you wouldn't have had the experience of 4-H and seeing the world, you might not be who you are today. I think it's important for our listeners to know that.
It's pretty cool to like do this with you because I've known you since I was a little kid. And we did pretty well. Like I think our family, you know, we had some pretty good cows. And I feel like I won most of the time until Chelsea and Caitlin were there, because then I just get second. You know, it's fun, you know, like 4-H was just, there's so much you learn at that age that you maybe don't appreciate till you get older. But that's really where I learned, you know, have responsibility and to work towards the goal. I had to wash my cow every day because my parents weren't going to do it. And if I didn't, then I'd show up to the show with stained cow. And that's not fun. You're not going to do well in the show. And I think I definitely learned how to be tough. My sister, I remember, she was ahead of me. And so she helped me a lot with my 4-H projects and stuff. But like, I remember there was like one day I was trying to clip my cow, and she was like pretty decent sized heifer. And I was young. She was kicking me a lot, and I was like crying and whining about it. My sister's like, suck it up. And that's when you have to take on the responsibility, and definitely something I appreciate now. That was a big part of my childhood and made me who I am now. And the determination to do well at the shows and all the people that we did and have that sense of community. A lot of farm kids don't get to meet other farm kids unless they do 4-H and stuff like that.
Because it takes a lot of us a lot of years to figure out some of the things you've already figured out, Ellie. One thing that our listeners will be intrigued with, because they know me as a cow person, one summer you worked for Border View, our farm up there in Vermont. Do you remember that?
I do. That was a fun summer for sure.
Yeah, we had a sale that time. My question for our listeners, Ellie, were you ever angry with me for anything at that farm? Do you want to talk about that at all?
I don't remember particularly being angry with you, no. I thought it was like a great opportunity being able to work with some really beautiful animals all summer long. And I think I was maybe nervous. The thing that stressed me out the most was trying to walk the box cows down the steps and around the corner to the wash rack, because they were the most expensive cows. And it's like you were pulling and pulling on them, and then they'd start to go, but then they'd have to go down the steps. And it's like, oh my God, that gave me the most anxiety. It was a lot of fun. You know, I washed a lot of tails and...
When I found out you were going to UNH on a full scholarship and I wouldn't let you lead the cows anymore because I was afraid you were going to get stepped on and hurt, you were not real pleased with me that day.
Yeah, okay. I do remember that time. Yeah, I was a little... a little bit irritated, but I've gotten used to it now. People are always afraid I'm going to get hurt on the farm. And I'm like, listen, this is what I've done my whole life. Like, I know how to work with cows. You got to be brave, right?
Yeah, that's right. No, but I still laugh about that because I remember that day, I think you wanted to shoot me for saying I didn't want you leading the cows. You said, I've done this my whole life. I know how to do this like walking. So I think you continued to lead cows at Border View, but that was a great summer, Ellie. It was fun to have you.
Yeah, rolling up to, I worked that summer and then I helped you guys sometimes when I would be home from college, like to help get ready for classifying and stuff. I think once I went to the fair with you guys and it was just kind of cool to roll up to the Vermont State Holstein show, like with the goat. People didn't know who you were, you know what I mean? That was pretty fun.
Well, we had a good time with you. So speaking of people that are influential in your life, I really have a lot of respect for your in-laws and your new husband. Tell us a little about Jamie and Pleasant Valley Farm and your involvement there. Our listeners will want to know a little about that.
My husband, Jamie, grew up in Berkshire and his dad and mom started their first generation farm and they've really grown and been really successful at what they do and milking on three different sites here, but they have just a large scale operation that's really different than how I grew up, but it's been a lot of fun to kind of see what they do and be a part of that. And right now, Jamie and his brother Bradley are starting the transition to take over the farm. And so their parents are trying to, you know, start to phase out and transition it's not always easy. So everybody's kind of figuring out where they're working and how everything's going to move forward. It's been awesome to be a part of it. Like I grew up with Jamie. And so I would help when I could, when I was in high school and whatever, but my main focus was helping my parents. So when we sold the cows in 2020 is really when I started to help more on Pleasant Valley. And so it's been a big learning curve for sure. I grew up on a tie stall farm. And so, you know, the basics are the same, but it's just different, but it's been a lot of fun, like more interested in working with the cows and stuff. So that's where I've focused my time and training a lot and stuff. So it's pretty part-time, but when I am home, I'm kind of doing more herdsman work and kind of just jumping wherever I can help and filling in when I can. And, you know, a lot of times like I'll start doing a job and I'll get into like a routine, but then I have to go to Flagstaff for training camp for like 3 or 4 weeks. So like somebody else has to like take that job and do it because it's important. And so I come home and I'm like, oh, now what can I help with? A lot of times doing like sorting cows, like helping vaccinate cows. I milk in the hospital pen a lot of times in the hospital parlor. And that's something I can do with Ivan on my back. So that's been just trucking cows, like just doing whatever I can to help. And I really feel very fortunate that I have joined this family where they are having this operating farm that I can still be a part of. You know, like it's tough out there and my family sold our cows and it's not guaranteed that I would be able to work with cows. So it's awesome that they work with me and my schedule and let me help when I can. And eventually I know that I'll be home more full time and be able to have a more full time position. But for now, I'm just enjoying like being a part of it at all.
Can you give your husband will never give me this answer. So maybe you can approximately how many cows does Pleasant Valley milk in general?
They would say all of them, you know.
That's it. Yeah, I was going to say.
A few thousand, I don't know. Yeah, they have three sites. So spread out between it, it's a few thousand. They have the home farm and then the satellite dairy, Archambault's. And then they have the transition farm, Lumbros, where they calve out all their cows and heifers. So they go up there on the close-up ration and calve out there, spend 3 weeks there, and then go back to either the home farm or Archambault's. But
the bottom line is for our listeners, several thousand cows and lots of acres. You'd put up all your own feed, all that. So it's
amazing. Raise all their own heifers. It's a lot.
Can you quickly touch on the maple industry? Because I know your husband is very passionate about the growth of that at Pleasant Valley. Just give us some idea of the scope of how many trees you tap or how many of what goes on in your maple world.
So it's kind of wrapping up right now, actually, the maple season. It's been pretty bumper crop, to be honest. Yeah, they kind of have maple trees a little here, there, and everywhere. When I first started dating Jamie is when they started the maple, and it was a lot smaller than now. Like, it's really not my, like, I help with maple when I Kent like I used to in high school, and not so much anymore, but it's like 100,000.
Yeah, trees. A lot of trees.
It's really awesome to see, like, they use a lot of the resources from the farm, like the trucks that they use to haul the sap, usually feed trucks in the summertime. They use the help, like a lot of the part-time help that used to leave during the winter months is helping with the sugaring and using the resources from the farm to help the maple. And it's really worked out well. It's what a lot of Vermont farmers do, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's neat. I wanted our listeners to think about the dual, like you say, in the springtime when you're not planting and cropping, you're tapping trees and making sap. I mean, that's the resourcefulness of the New Englanders that we all are.
Definitely.
And I would say, Ellie, again, for our listeners, your in-laws, Mark and Mandy St. Pierre, they are the goats of of the dairy business in Vermont. They definitely are.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have driven success in dairying in the state of Vermont. Both of them are visionaries. Mandy is just as involved as Mark and just as influential in that. And I think we in the dairy industry are lucky to have your in-laws and your husband and your brother-in-law, but now you to help carry on this and tell the world what we're doing in agriculture in Vermont. There was a change in your life recently. Tell us about, you referenced him. Tell us about Ivan. I've never met Ivan. I've heard a lot about him. Tell us a little about what's gone on in your life.
Yeah, that was a big change for sure. Ivan just turned 13 months old. He completely changed my life for sure. I don't really know who I was before I had Ivan, but he's just been so great. He's my whole world now. Like, it's so awesome to have him. So yeah, he was born last March. He's getting around like crazy these days. He's into everything. He's, you know, climbing up the stairs and the cupboards and the dog dish. And if you leave the bathroom door open, he thinks it's a swimming pool in the toilet. It's not great. I have to shut the door now. We figured that one out real quick. But he's just keeping me on my toes, you know. But he's just a really good natured baby. I don't like to say kid now. He's not, like, he's technically not a baby anymore. But he's just been, he's been so fun. He loves to be busy. And I think he probably gets that from Jamie and I, both of us. When I was pregnant, I didn't really slow down. I was kind of doing a lot of stuff, and so I was always on the move, and likes to play on his own. He also likes to come to the farm with me. He loves just riding in the backpack on my back. That way he has like a front row seat to everything. He loves animals already. Like, he's obsessed with the dog, likes the cows, hoping that he'll want to be a part of the farm someday.
And is he traveling the world with you as you train and go work? Ellie, how does that work with a newborn baby? That's one more thing that I admire you for. How does that work?
Still trying to figure that out, you know, don't have it all figured out. But yeah, he travels with me. So I go to Arizona 2 to 3 times a year and train at high altitude. Ivan comes with me for that, those trips and one plane ride there and whatever. We get settled in our house, and that worked out fine in January. But it's more of like the traveling to the races and stuff that's kind of hard. And, you know, he's older now, so it might be okay to leave him for some trips. Has daycare here, and we're lucky we have our parents close by that can help out with him and such. But he did come to Scotland with me for the World Championships. So he has his little passport. He is a world traveler for sure.
That's awesome. That leads me to, I'd like to round out this discussion on a couple topics. Certainly you referenced it earlier, Ellie, but you've talked about going professional in running. A lot of us don't even know what that means. Tell us a little about what being a professional runner actually means.
Similar to any other kind of professional sport, but different. Most professional runners just have their one main sponsor, and they're kind of like on their own. So like a lot of the sponsors are mainly shoe companies. So I'm sponsored by New Balance. But we also have a team. Then so our whole team is sponsored by New Balance, like we're together, but like each one of us has our own contract. So I train with these other women, and we have a coach that's, you know, paid by New Balance. Does that explain it?
Yeah, no, I think that's good for people to understand it. It's no different than a basketball player or a football player in your own venue. And
right. Yeah. So I, you know, our team is based in Boston. That's where New Balance is. I, like, when I first signed pro, was spending a lot more time there. I had an apartment in Boston, and I was training with the team day to day, but this kind of made it so it's more of a hybrid situation where I go down when I'm really training hard, I'll go down, you know, once a week, every 10 days and do the hard workouts with the team in Boston. But then otherwise I'm mostly training here on my own in Flagstaff with the team. But this amazing new facility in Boston, one of the fastest tracks in the world for sure. It's right next to the headquarters and right next to the gym where we've always spent a lot of. So it's just awesome to go down there. We have our own team room now and like it's like a big lab that like does like testing and everything on all the athletes. And that's where they do testing on the shoes and the clothes and all the different sports, not just for running, but we do have this amazing track. It's pretty cool to have that so close to home. Like I raced there this January and like my whole family went down. Jamie's whole family went down and like all my friends and family. That was pretty cool.
Well, it's neat because with any professional athlete, you need all the tools to get you there. And it sounds like New Balance is really helping you with that, with the technology and the leadership and the training to get you to be a world champion. So if we're going to sell anything today, Ellie, we better sell New Balance shoes and Showbox tires, right? Yeah, that would be the goal of this podcast. I'm going to get my New Balance gear when we're done, Ellie.
Oh, perfect.
So talk a little bit about, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but your Olympic experience, if you would. I talked to people from all over the world, Ellie, that were watching you, that knew we had a connection to you when you ran in the Olympics. You made us all so proud, but Tell us a little about the Olympic experience, and then we'll go into where you're at today.
Competing at the Olympics is like the gold standard. That's like what everybody in the professional running scene is working towards. And so like that is the epitome of our sport and our industry, basically. And so there is the world championships it goes Olympics and then it goes world championship. And then there's an off year. So like the Olympics is on that 4-year cycle. So it's kind of like you're waiting and thinking about the Olympics in 4 years. So it's like this high pressure comes down to just like one summer deal. I ran in the 2016 Olympic trials, not really a contender to make the team at that point, but it was an experience in itself to, you know, kind of go through that process. You run the Olympic trials and the top three make it to the Olympics, basically. So I did that in 2016. My Olympic experience was a little different just in the way that it was in COVID. The Olympics were postponed a year. They were supposed to be in 2020, but they were in 2021. So like when we all found out that the Olympics were postponed a year, we're kind of like, oh my God, like everybody's been waiting and waiting for this summer. And now it's like going to be next year. And we're like, are we sure it's going to be next year? You know, so that was kind of hard to like kind of train through that and just everything that was going on. But they happened. Had an amazing Olympic trials experience where I came in first. I actually broke the meet record, so the Olympic trials meet record. And my teammate Heather qualified with me, so I got to go to the Olympics with her. One bad thing that did happen was that I was pushed off the track during the Olympic trials and I severely tore a ligament in my foot, fractured a bone. I was not at my total best, I would say, in Tokyo. But like I said, like the dream was really just to be there. There was nobody in the stands. That was really strange. They like allowed the Olympics to happen, but they didn't allow any visitors to go to Tokyo. And like we actually couldn't even go out into the city at all. So like there's the Olympic Village where all the athletes were staying, and you're in like this cramped little room. They're like dorms, but worse because they're just like put up really quickly for the Olympics. And it was kind of like college for like a week or whatever, but like it's really hard to sleep on the beds because they weren't very comfortable and like it was really loud. And then like you're trying to compete at like the epitome of your sport and like everybody's watching and talking about it, and like you're so far from home and there's nobody there that you knew other than the athletes. That was a different experience for sure, but I think every race you learn something from. So I definitely learned a lot there, and definitely gives me more confidence going into this next Olympic cycle.
As you say, anybody that appreciates sports, it's the epitome of the game, whatever sport you're into. Let's skip forward to recently. Many of us watched you, I believe it was in Oregon, the U.S. Nationals, and then the World Championships, which I think were in Scotland. Tell us about your success at those two events.
Yeah, the U.S. Championships were actually in Albuquerque. That was a different experience because you're racing at altitude, which is not fun at all. Like, nobody knows why they're hosted in Albuquerque. It's like at 5,000 feet, and it just, like, no matter what, like, you just don't feel good racing there. Because I took a year off from having a baby, I hadn't raced a lot in a while. We kind of like, we're trying to use this indoor season as a stepping stone to the outdoor season, like we usually do. We went a little bit harder just because I hadn't raced so much. Like usually you get a lot of fitness from the year before and, you know, you get that sharpness and readiness for the outdoor season. I got pretty fit in January, kind of got on a roll. And so some people don't really do the indoor world championships, but like in the US, like if you're not, mostly people focus on the outdoors is what I'm trying to say. But because I was feeling so good and everything, like everything was kind of coming together, I really just went all at it. So I ended up qualifying for the world championships. We went to Scotland. I had medaled in the 3000 meters 2 years ago. So I had confidence that I could do it again. The competition was daunting for sure. Like there was a lot of really good names and really high caliber athletes on the list. I gave myself a shot and I ended up winning. What it's not just like, it was a big deal. It was a really big deal. Like Sagai is a woman who got second and she is an Olympic gold medalist and she is a world record holder. So like, she's like all time one of the best athletes in the world. So the fact that I beat her is like huge. Like I couldn't have asked for a better race.
It had your whole world talking too, didn't it, Ellie? I mean, I'm sure the whole running world, when somebody beats Michael Jordan in a game of one-on-one in basketball, yeah, it gets their attention. And Ellie Puryear-St-Pierre beat the number one in the world of recent in that meet. So yeah, it surely caught some attention to you.
Oh yeah. And I mean, the fact that I did it like 2 days before Ivan's birthday. So like, this is less than a year after having a baby. And, you know, I came back from having Ivan and I was just determined and I feel like a happier, better athlete now. And I did kind of feel like I had a lot to prove. And so I just worked my ass off. I just ran really hard all year and trained really hard. I listened to my body and I had fun with it and everything kind of aligned and kind of the limbo between indoors and outdoors.
So what's your next step to wrap up the running discussion, Ellie? The next step, yeah, of how you compete and what potential you have for this summer. I don't want to get the cart ahead of the horse here, right? So what is the process for our listeners so they understand, you know, where they may see you next?
The Olympic trials are in June out in Eugene, like you said. Between now and then, I'm just kind of ramping up. I took a little bit of a break after World Indoors. Like I took, you know, a few days off from running and then didn't do workouts for a week. But now I'm getting going again. So I'm running about 85 miles a week and I've done that the last 2 weeks. So then this will be my third week at 85 miles. And then I'll dip down a little bit before I head back to Flagstaff at 7,000 feet. And that's where we train really hard. And I respond really well to the altitude. So when you're training at altitude, your body has to work harder and you make more red blood cells. And that kind of stays in your system. So like when you come down and you race at sea level, then you run a lot faster. So that's something we've really utilized in my training. I'll head out to Flagstaff for 4 weeks and then I'll race out in LA. I think that's like May 17th or 18th. I'll race out there. I'm actually going to do the 5K there. My coach is kind of wants to keep our options open. And like, I was kind of leaning towards, like I raced the 1500 at the last Olympics and that's definitely more of my sweet spot, comfort zone. I loved 1500. He wants to keep our options open. So I'm going to run a 5K. That way I have like the qualifying time for the Olympic trials. And in order to make it to the Olympics, you have to have the qualifying time. So that's the Olympic standard. If you don't run that time, then you can't go. So you have to do that and you have to come in top three in your country. Across the world, you have to have the Olympic standard in order to go to the Olympics. I'll be shooting to get that that weekend in May and then probably going to focus on the 1500, but keeping our options open.
Great. Well, that's exciting. You've got a whole industry and certainly a nation pulling for you, but we can't wait. And I don't want to jinx you about what we could be watching in August. So we're not even going to talk about it. One last thing on running for the listeners. So you run the 1500 meter. How long does it take you to run the 1500 meter? What's your best time?
It's 3:58, but I haven't run it in a few years. First of all, it's a little bit less than a mile for people's understanding. So it's like 109 meters shorter than a mile. But my mile time is 4 minutes and 16 seconds, which is the American record indoors. Yeah.
I almost can't drive a mile in 4 minutes and 16 seconds. And I said, you said you're training 85 miles a week. Again, I don't even like to drive 85 miles a week. So I want to finish this discussion more for the youth of our industry. And I hope the parents, and uncles and aunts that listen to this podcast will pass this on to young people. What drives you? Why are you so successful?
I definitely have like a very competitive edge. It's probably something I learned from a young age competing in 4-H and definitely just my personality. If I was, you know, like to give advice to some young farmers and young 4-H'ers, there's so many things I could say. But I would say that, you know, it's definitely really important to work hard. And that's something that I don't need to preach to farm kids. They all know that. You know, it's important to make sacrifices that you need to make, but don't, you know, sacrifice everything. Like you have to follow your dreams and do what makes you happy. Like that's really important. Like I think having determination and passion, having passion helps with your determination. So if you're doing something that you care about and you love doing, like you're going to want to put more energy into it and more work, and it's going to be a little bit easier. You know, you're going to be happier. And that's definitely a big key. That's been a big key to my success. Piece of advice is just to kind of find balance in your life. You know, I think it's important not to put all your eggs in one basket. For young kids who are thinking about starting a different career, like off the farm, you'll always have the farm too. Like, I'm not saying that you have to pick one or the other, you know, like you can kind of do both. That's what I've done. And I think that's been a big part of my success. I give everything I can to running well right now, but I'm planning to return to the farm, and things aren't going so good running. Like I always have the farm and vice versa. I think it's kind of helped me find balance and find success for sure. Being a farm kid is the best gift that I've been given. So if you're a farm kid, and just remember how special that is. It's given you a lot of life lessons that you'll be able to use in anything that you want to pursue.
Just the perfect way to end this, Ellie. I don't know that any more profound words could be spoken than we as farm kids were given a gift. Ellie Perrier St. Pierre, there's nobody that's turned their gift into more success than you. You're driven, you're passionate, you're happy, you're a wife, a mom, a farm kid, a great supporter of the community. You know, it gives me goosebumps to think that I'm lucky enough to call you a friend and had this interview. So Ellie, we'll wrap up this by wishing you the best at your Olympic trials. We'll all be watching and supporting you. I'll give it to you one more minute to wrap up any comments you might have before we're done.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been awesome. Fun to do a podcast with somebody I know so well. And usually it's somebody I'm trying to get to know, but you've seen me from when I was a young kid showing against your girls. And I feel like it's just the same. I'm the same person. Like I've just stayed true to my roots and here I am. And I'm happy to have people in my life like you and people who have supported me all along.
Well, thanks, Ellie. It's been a delight. I hope our listeners on this series enjoy it as much as I have. So thank you for listening to this podcast on Dairy Business Today. We appreciate your listenership. We hope you'll share this podcast with others in the industry, the passion and the success. Again, our series sponsored by Showbox Sires is The Evolution of the Great Cow. We didn't talk much about cows today, but we talked about greatness today. I think whether you're passionate about running or farming or your community or breeding cows, as we are with Showbox, I think Ellie is the poster child for all those things. So thank you for listening, and we'll look forward to having you join us on a future episode of Dairy Business Podcast.